The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the KM Community Podcast. I'm your host Oliver Kemp, and over the coming months myself and my colleague Eliza Shah will be bringing you the important stories and issues from communities all over the county. If you have a story you think needs to be told, just use the hashtag KM Community on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, or you can email me at okemp@thekmgroup.co.uk. This week, the rise of Islamophobia has been talked about a lot in the past few years. The Equality and Human Rights Commission reported 70% of Muslims they interviewed had experienced religion-based prejudice in 2018. The Home Office announced more than half of religiously motivated attacks in 2017 to 2018 were directed at Muslims. There are over 3 million Muslims living in Britain today, so what's it like to live a life of Islam in a local Kent community? To discuss this and the issue of Islamophobia, I sat down with Safir Khan, the Imam of Nazir Mosque in Gillingham.
The KM Community Podcast.
So first off, Safir, Hope Not Hate, the anti-racism charity, has done a lot of work highlighting the mainstreaming of anti-Muslim hatred. There's been reports of Islamophobic attacks in America increasing since Donald Trump's inauguration, an increased anti-Islam sentiment in the wake of Brexit. And as someone who's at ground level when it comes to being a Muslim and a figure of Islam in the community, is Islamophobia on the rise in Britain?
It definitely is. I mean, not only just in Britain, because obviously I was born in Norway and I grew up there, and then I came here, moved here, started working here as an imam. But even in Norway and I would say most Western countries, there are issues around Islamophobia. And there are perhaps reasons to that. Some of the reasons are obviously the obvious things that happen on the news, the terrorist attacks or any extremist news that comes up, and then people do react to that, and we do get the news that this has happened, but we rarely get the true message that this, if there is somebody who calls themselves Muslims or someone in the Muslim countries are fighting, practicing terrorism, that comes up in the news. So people associate that with Islam, perhaps, sometimes. And then we really get that message in the news that this, what is being done, is not, Islamic. It's not the true message of Islam. So I think people, unfortunately, associate, I'm not saying everyone, some people then associate those actions with Islam. And I think that could promote, could play a part in raising Islamophobia. And as a Muslim growing up in Western countries, being born in Norway, living here and working here in the UK, I am proud and extremely grateful that, the people of these countries are very open-minded, very welcoming. British people are amazing people. We have a multicultural society here, also in Norway as well. But unfortunately, there are, some sections of people maybe who have their reservations, and it could be for several reasons. Maybe what I have seen is that the most cases of Islamophobia stem for ignorance and lack of understanding of each other. So even if I would not have any understanding of a different religion and I would see something bad happening in the name of that religion, then automatically, if I don't have that education understanding, I could be ignorant as well. Everybody could be that if they don't have that knowledge. So I think that is the case. The challenge we have today, I think all Muslims, is to reach out and remove some misconceptions people have about Islam. And the only way that's going to happen is when we talk to people and when people talk to us.
So do you think, based on that, do you think some of the responsibility falls on the people that are in power? I mean, we talk about Donald Trump, but what about someone like Boris Johnson, for example, our Prime Minister? I mean, you've got him previously calling women in burqas letterboxes, writing articles, claiming Islam has put the world centuries behind. That's an actual quote. How does a figure like that hope to represent more than 3 million Muslims living in Britain today and kind of stop that ignorance from happening?
I think that is a very important point that you have raised, that yes, these political leaders, people who are in power, they have huge influence. They have, big following as well. Just look at the United States, for example, other places as well, here in the UK, for example, as well. So being a leader of a country that is so multicultural, where you have so much diversity, people from different backgrounds, you have to be very, very careful with not pitching people against each other. And that's very easy to, that's a very easy mistake to commit. Because, you know, one comment like that, that you mentioned about the burqa, there's a different way to raise an objection or start a debate, which is completely fine. You know, we all have religious freedom. We have freedom of speech. We should talk about issues, and we should, you know, bring that to the table and try to understand each other's point of view and respect that as well. But comments like that, which are derogatory, I believe, and damage the respect and the peace of the society, that is a huge responsibility for the leaders. And unfortunately, you know, in recent times, we have seen that far right or I'll call it extremist as well, extremist political parties are gaining prominence, power, and this kind of rhetoric is being used to you know, incite people to hate, rather than, you know, in the 21st century that we live in, we want to wish that, you know, we have progress, then we are now more accepting towards each other, we love each other more. But this is dangerous, and it comes from the top. It comes from the top, it comes from the media, because these sources are the sources through which people can be, you know, impacted. Their views could be changed, you know?
Then it's not just a British, this isn't just a British conversation,
no,
is it? Because we have the same conversations happening in European countries.
Absolutely.
Some people see the rise of populism as being part of that. And,
yep.
And if it is about changing perceptions, then you know, there's a lot of discussions around some of the things that have happened in other European countries. You've had extremist attacks, which then presumably fuel this kind of these kind of perceptions,
yep,
on Islam as a religion.
Exactly, and some countries are really good at condemning extremist acts. Even here in the UK, for example, when these terrorist attacks happened, I quite clearly remember that. It was condemned from the highest level that, you know, this is not Islam, and even Muslims as well, you know, they came out, and that's also very important that Muslims themselves as well. I mean, me as an imam, whenever something unfortunate like this, you know, these kind of things happen, it is my duty and it is duty for Muslims to come out and express sympathy and tell people that, look, you know, what has happened is not nice, it's not what we stand for, it's not what we believe, and we're really sorry that this has happened, and we're going to stand together, we're going to fight this evil together, and let not this affect our relationships, and let not these, because the aim of these terrorists is to create that hatred, isn't it, to disrupt our peaceful society. So that is a challenge for us. So for Muslims also, there is a responsibility to come out. We can't just be silent, and because then people are going to think, okay, you know, they probably agree with this doctrine, or they don't, you know, condemn it. So they have a duty. And then, of course, you know, the leaders have a duty to let everybody know that, you know, this has happened from individuals who are terrorists, who are not religious people, because, you know, any religious people would never do this, who truly understand. You do Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, you look at any religion, all the teachings are there that promote peace and promote, you know, working together and treating your brother or sister like how you want to be treated, you know. So your question was around, you know, the responsibility of leaders, weren't it? Yeah. So I think, yes, that is very, very important. And comments, if somebody makes comments like that, then you know, the rest of the people in the country are going to also, you know, rise up against the minorities in the country. For example, in the United States, you can see you know, if certain rhetoric is being used, go back to the country you came from. That's a classic, you know, racist slogan. You know,
that's coming from the president of the United States. You know that. But I want to kind of go back to something you just said about the British government are very good at condemning these attacks when they happen. Is there not a level of hypocrisy there, though, if, for example, the British government are very good at condemning those attacks, but then you have a leader who has said things that could be considered Islamophobic in the past?
Many people, many experts are saying that we are on the brink of possibly a third world war because of the conflicts and high tensions in all parts of the world, really. We have Brexit issue, which has divided our country to a huge, you know, huge scale, and these things are frustrating. And when frustration builds up, things can go wrong. So the new prime minister has a huge responsibility of first to bring people together, whether it's political reasons, whether it's about Brexit, unite people, and when it comes to religious freedom, when it comes to religious issues as well, to unite people. Because obviously, you know, as a prime minister, you are the leader of the whole country. You're not just the leader of the English people here, or the white people, or the black people, the brown people. Everybody is here as part of your people, so you have to find a way to unite all of them. And certainly if minorities or certain religious backgrounds or cultures are attacked, and comments are made of such nature, then that certainly does not help. That will cause further disruption.
So a lot of it is about changing perceptions. Yeah. I know that you have open days sometimes at the Nazir Mosque where you invite people outside the faith to experience it. You know, come into the mosque, see what it's like, mm-hmm. ask questions. You kind of have like a any question can be asked policy.
Yeah.
What has that experience been like?
Yeah, so the Ahmadiyya Muslim community has always been pushing this idea that the true message of Islam has to go out to people, because once they understand it, they will see the difference between terrorism, extremism, and what, you know, true Islam or true religion is for Muslims. So we have the Ahmadiyya Muslim community is established in about 200 countries worldwide, and we have millions of people, of course. And all the mosques that we have established, our motto is love for all, hatred for none. That's the motto for our community, and we try to push that out to people, and we try to implement that in our mosques as well. So if wherever there is an Ahmadi Muslim mosque, such as we have one here in Gillingham where I am, we have been told specifically that this mosque is not just for Muslims. This mosque should not be just closed, that nobody can come in here except Muslims. The door should be open, and people from local community, neighbors, anybody who wants to come, schools, school children, you know, all these people, they want to come, make sure that we facilitate them, make sure that we make them welcome. Because in many villages, in many places where we have mosques, when they are built, people have questions, people have reservation, perhaps, that, you know, wow, a mosque is here. Is it safe? You know, what's going to happen here? So when this mosque in Gillingham was inaugurated back in 2014, the worldwide leader of our community, his name is Hazem Mirza Masroor Ahmed, he's a spiritual caliph, a leader of the community. He came and he said that this mosque has been named Nasir Mosque. Nasir in Arabic means helper. So he said this mosque should live up to its name, be a helper for the community. And he said that this is a mosque for the whole community. They can come and see how Muslims pray. They can ask any questions. And he also says that he also said that no pain or no inconvenience should be caused to neighbors or the local community. So we had open day, the first open day was that day, and then regularly we have been holding open days where we invite, open invitation really, to anyone who wants to come and see the mosque. We invite them, we show them around the mosque, and some of them say, wow, it's the first time we've been into the mosque, you know, into a mosque in our whole life. So they're really fascinated, they really like the architecture and see how we pray. And then we sit down and we have a presentation or discussion, tell them a little bit basic about what Islam is as a religion. Then we tell them about these issues, recent issues, you know, how we deal with them, what we think about that. And then we have question answers open. Everybody can ask any question they want.
And what kind of questions What are the common questions that come up from people in the community?
Yeah, loads of different questions, such as about, you know, extremism, terrorism, about burqa, about why women, Muslim women, wear the veil, why we don't eat pork, why we don't drink alcohol, such things. And after the question answers, there is so much positiveness and so much happiness from our guests as well, because they say that, you know, we learned so much. And of course, I mean, we learn from them as well. But they're just so happy that they were able to ask these questions. And they often say that now we understand that, you know, your religion is actually so beautiful and peaceful. And it's unfortunate that people are misrepresenting it in this form. And not to forget, at every open day, we have refreshments. We have food. That's a very important thing as well. And after that, we have dinner or lunch with our guests. So yeah, you should come around next time.
I absolutely will. It sounds like from what you're saying that the most, and maybe it's not that surprising, that the common thing that people like to ask about is the connection between religious extremism and Islam. Like those people, those things are the things that people want to know about. Mm. Are people still conflating those two things, or they see religious extremism and then they see Islam and they're interchangeable in their minds?
They, you know, most people know the difference, I think, because most British people here, what I have experienced is that they are very, you know, informed. They know how to make the distinction. They have friends, they have colleagues, perhaps, who are Muslims, and they know that, you know, they're not like that, you know, and we have talked to them and we understand. They've also been to some Muslim countries and seen that, you know, there is peaceful societies, you know, people living side by side peacefully. So they understand. But then obviously there are also people who need that, you know, information. It is then the responsibility of the local Muslim communities to, you know, to give that education or that information out, at least, so people can make their choices, understand. In my experience, I've seen almost 50% of the people who come and visit us, they have these sort of questions, which is surprising as well, because you think that, you know, this people should know this, but many people don't, because as I mentioned, for many people, their source of information is media and the newspapers and whatever is said here. Really, anybody would go and read the Quran or the Bible or the religious text, you know, people don't usually have time for that or the interest. So then, you know, the best way to understand about people's religions and their beliefs is through talking to people and through doing a little bit of research as well. Research and these things, as I mentioned, people probably don't have time for or is not that interesting, but talking to people in a forum like that, one-to-one, asking a question freely and expecting an answer, that's the best way to, you know, learn.
To having open discussions.
Exactly.
Because it was only yesterday that Harrow Council, which is a you know, a borough in North London, adopted the all-party parliamentary group of British Muslims' definition of Islamophobia, which is Islamophobia is rooted in racism and is a type of racism that targets expressions of Muslimness or perceived Muslimness. Now, I suppose that's a bit of a contentious point for some groups. So the National Secular Society said that this could stop openness and healthy debate around religious practice. I mean, do you agree with the all-party parliamentary group's definition of Islamophobia there?
I think that maybe the definition has raised some questions because of its broadness. You see, I fully agree with the part that we should try to you know, discourage Islamophobia as strongly as possible, which is understandable. The same with, you know, any kind of hate, if it's anti-Semitism or any kind of other hate, right? Hate is something that we have to strongly discourage and condemn. But as a Muslim imam, I often have discussions with Christians. I often have discussions with people from different backgrounds, faith or no faith, and I think it's very healthy to have a open discussion. And I think that questions about, for example, in Muslim, when it comes to Islam, people often question about women's right, you know, other things that are of important, you know, issues, and I think it's important to discuss those things. So we don't want to limit freedom of speech, but I think that every discussion, every question, every debate, I think has a fine line of respect and tolerance. But having said that, having those two things, you can have an open discussion about any religion, any matter, without disrespecting other people. So I am actually, I'm really happy when people ask controversial questions, because that gives me the opportunity to remove some of the misconceptions. It gives me an opportunity to explain what the reason is. For example, what is the reason why a Muslim woman would wear veil? Many people think that they are compulsory. It's not compulsory. It's the choice of the individual. And it's not because a Muslim woman is being deprived of her rights. It's actually for moral reasons. Yeah. So, same way, these kind of questions are really, really important. And I think that in a society that we live, it's healthy and it's good to have open discussion. But when it comes to Islamophobia, yeah, we should all discourage hate, whether it's Islamophobia, whether it's hate against Christians, whether it's hate against Jews, hate against any kind of people. We have to, you know, at the end of the day, I stand by the motto of our community, which is love for all, hatred for none.
I guess that's the difficulty with finding that line of tolerance, because, you know, how can you distinguish between a criticism of a specific part of Islam and discussion, and where that criticism could then become Islamophobia? Like, who's making those decisions?
Exactly,
that makes
exactly.
it a difficult debate.
Yeah, I mean, that you can say that if somebody asks a question about this, then you can say it is totally wrong to say that that person is Islamophobic because he just questions something about Islam. It is good to question things and it is good to get an answer. But one thing is questioning with the reason of questioning, and the other thing is to actually make a comment that is derogatory. So I think that you can make that distinction. It's not that difficult. So you can, if somebody is talking to you, the way somebody talks as well, you can understand that this person is not asking a question, is perhaps, you know, putting his anger out or something like that. But yeah, as I said, you know, we should... I believe that, you know, in an open society, Islam also, as a religion, encourages to debate. It encourages to ask questions. And it encourages to learn about different religions with the respect. So on top of my head, a verse comes from the Quran as well, where it says that, do not ridicule a people, because it could be that, you know, they're better than you. And if you ridicule someone, it could be that they then in return ridicule you and, you know, your beliefs. So have that mutual understanding, respect. And then there's a verse in the Quran that says, La ikraha fi din, in Arabic, which means there is no compulsion in religion. You know, if people ask questions and they're happy to follow it, that's fine. That's their choice. But there's no compulsion. There's no force. Everybody is entitled to their own choice. Our matter of religious beliefs and everything is between us and God, if you believe in God, yeah.
Mm. And at the beginning of this podcast, you said that you believe that despite people engaging in talks on a local level and having their misconceptions challenged, Islamophobia is in general on the rise.
Yeah.
Do you think with future generations that will start to decrease, or do you fear that it will increase from here on up?
That's difficult to say, isn't it? Tough question. I think that how is it's looking now, it's on the increase. That's the fact. What I hope and pray is that it decreases. And I think that if we do it this way, that we, if you follow these basic principles, right, of respecting other religions, respecting other people's choices, this is not just about religion, it's about everything, right? We need to get back to basic and do that, because we have done that, right? You know, we have had really, we still have, you know, this beautiful society where we have religious freedom. And I think that the more I can emphasize this, it's really, really important. And the reason I'm saying it, because my parents, for example, were from Pakistan. They migrated from Pakistan because they could not practice their Ahmadiyya Muslim community religious faith in Pakistan because of persecution, strong persecution, so much so that people from our community get murdered, killed, their houses are looted, they are, you know, denied a chance of vote in their country. They cannot call themselves Muslims by name. If they call themselves Muslims or do anything that is Islamic, they can literally go to jail. So religious freedom, I think, is it's a beautiful thing. And this is something, you know, when my parents as well, when I was growing up, they said, look, you live in a country that has given you refuge. You lived in Norway that time. And they said that we really respect this country and we love it even more because more than our country, because obviously we were from that country, but we could not live there in peace. So they always taught me that be always loyal to your country and always try to do whatever you do, try to in some way play a part in progress of your country and respect your fellow, you know, countrymen, whether they are Norwegians, whether they are Christians, whether they are of different race, color. So I think that kind of message is really important, that in a society we live, we're very lucky to have religious freedom. Many countries don't have that. So we are not that bad, you know, long from it. This challenge is a big challenge. But as I said, you know, we have to go back to the principles, back to the basics, and just promote love and discourage hatred together as a united nation. And that challenge is tough for the politicians now to first of all bring the country together.
Sophia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.